Our guest tonight is veteran stand-up comedian Todd Glass. His memoir, The Todd Glass Situation, is in stores now, and his podcast, The Todd Glass Show, is available wherever you get podcasts.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
We started this whole thing off in like a big ball of confusion. Well, I think we made it confusing because Mike was emailing you and giving you my contact information, and I was calling you like a day or so late and getting voicemails and leaving it. And that was all probably fairly confusing, but what was the most confusing to me is that you actually agreed to do the show.
Yeah, why are you so nice to us, Todd? What's going on?
Well, you know, well, the funny thing, no, when you're... I'm at a podium right now, so I hope that's the way you like to imagine me doing this interview.
I do. Give us your State of the Union.
No, you know what? When you're trying to get things, there's always, you know, I'm trying to get things from other people sometimes, and you're just shocked when somebody says yes, so you try to turn it around and do it for somebody else. Because I've had, you know, things in my career where I've asked and somebody said yeah, and I was like, fuck, I can't believe they said yes. And then, so you try to turn it around and do it for someone else.
You're a good man, Todd Glass.
Yeah, thank you.
Well,
I like talking about the book, so it's good for me too. I'm not gonna make it.
That's perfect, because I was actually gonna reference that, because not only are you a very well known comedian, but now also as of last year, correct? Like last summer, I believe you released the book.
I think it was July or June or July of the last, just past June or July.
Now, I'm sure you've probably explained this a bunch of times, but the title of the book is The Todd Glass Situation, A Bunch of Lies About My Personal Life and a bunch of True Stories About My 30-Year Career in Stand-Up Comedy. Now, did you research that to see if you could get into the Guinness World Record book to get the longest title?
I know, it's so... Well, at least the title is really... The Todd Glass Situation. That's really the title.
Just a subtitle.
Yeah, the subtitles can be long, Simon and Schuster said, but the original, the title is The Todd Glass Situation. But, you know, the original title I wanted is, and Simon and Schuster, they were great. The whole experience was great. I didn't get the name I wanted. I'll never know if I was right or wrong, but I'll tell you the name. You can tell me if you can guess what it was about without knowing. So,
okay.
And I'll give you the subtitle in this one too. And there's a lot of prefacing here. I don't know why. It's not like it's a wrong word, but you know, when they go like, someone's in the closet, everyone knows what that means. So,
sure.
I don't know why. I don't think that's a bad title or anything. It's not like I'm telling people they should stop saying it, but it's just, I don't like it. It's just so, you know, whatever. But I said to them, if you let me call it this, I don't even mind if that's in the subtitle. So here it was. So this would have been the name. Then you tell me if you saw it on the shelf, if you had to, could you figure it out? If not, that's okay too. It was going to be called All I Ever Wanted to Do Was Meet a Girl with a Terminal Disease. And the subtitle would have been And Other Stupid Things I Said and Did to Keep the Closet Door Shut.
I could have figured it out.
Try to guess what that has to do with the story in the book. Tell me if you could figure that out.
I get it.
What do you think it was? What do you think that meant? Like, what does that mean?
You would have liked to have had a fake or maybe a short-term lady that you could discuss
you
with people.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That, you do like an Anna Nicole Smith.
Right, Anna Nicole.
Somebody that was like, and you know, you don't think it through because if it's not, actually the original title I wanted was All I Ever Wanted to Do, because this is the true story, was all I ever wanted to was meet a nice girl with cancer and other stupid things I said and did to keep the closet door shut, because I thought, you don't think it through. It has nothing to do with being offensive to people with cancer. Matter of fact, when I was paranoid about that, I asked my friend's mom who was going through cancer, who's doing awesome now. I said, you get that? She goes, yes, that has nothing to do with anybody with cancer. It has to do with an 18-year-old kid having a not well-thought-out plan. I'll meet a girl. She'll have cancer. Then when she dies, I could tell people when I'm 70, I never got over Karen. You know?
It's my one true love.
Never got over her. So that was the name, and I thought it was just a little grabbier, you know, a little catches people's eye a little more, but we went with the Todd Glass situation because that was what I used to call what I was. I would go, like, if I had a friend that knew, and let's say somebody was coming in town, like an old friend, and I would be like, oh, by the way, they don't know about my situation. And my friend Daniel Kino once goes, oh, is that what you call it, a situation?
Todd, I'm going to bum you out, but I think I like your original title better. I like the one you didn't use.
Well, you're right.
It's a better title.
And I think it's a better title, and I really did think, I thought, you know, when I hoped to get on Howard Stern, I thought that's a book title that would end up in front of somebody. It's like, whoa, what is that about? Even if they couldn't guess what it was, even if there was no subtitle, I think it might even have been better. It's like, whoa, what's this about? And then it makes people read, maybe, and go, oh, okay.
That Simon and Schuster doesn't know shit about selling books.
You know, the truth is, Schuster was great, but Simon, a real stick up his ass.
They're always butting heads, those two.
But you know, it was still an unbelievable experience from start to finish with them. It's like the way you want things to go, whether you're working on a show or, doing music, you want to create the people that have the money and that have really control to be as, they were awesome. I mean, they were just unbelievable. So on that one, but you know what? They were so awesome. But my brother said something funny. He goes, yeah, you always tell everybody how awesome they were, and they were, but for some reason you like to bring that up every interview you do about the thing.
The one fight that you had with them?
Yeah, it wasn't even a fight. It was just a creative. We went back and forth, and then I changed it. What about if I said, and instead of cancer, all I ever wanted to do was meet a nice girl with a terminal disease? They were like, God, that's not that much different. Like, okay.
The same concept. We're trying to stay away from that.
But yes, a good, a great experience from start to finish.
It's always nice if you can work with people, like you said, the money people that understand that really all you have to do is let creative people be creative and just kind of let them go.
Well, I think what happens a lot is they think they can fix something if it's broke, or they can, you know, well, first of all, there are good executives. I mean, notoriously, I think HBO was the first group to come along, and the word on HBO, anybody that ever worked with them, was they let the talent breathe.
Sure.
So now with everything going on, there's so many outlets that a lot of things get to breathe.
They saw that HBO was kind of running away with it. It seemed like not every Emmy nomination went to HBO, and so everybody said, maybe they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think so. But it still happens all the time. But it's part of the game. You know, you're working on a show. They all like to give their notes. But,
well, I think that's how we end up with shows like the upcoming one starring, what's the gal's name from Happy Endings, where the two friends decide that they're going to have a baby, but they're platonic friends. And then he meets the love of his life. So then they all have to live together to raise the baby.
I don't think I want to watch that show at all.
Those shows end up, they have their audience, but yeah, I sort of, it's not right to prejudge it before I see it. But
of course not.
I smelled that and I was like, doesn't smell good.
It reminds me of a time when there was like a glutton of like those shows on television where it was like, it has to have a wacky premise. It can't just be, hey, here's this funny guy that you know, he's going to do some funny stuff and you'll probably laugh.
Yeah, like if Eddie Pepitone had a show where he owned a grocery store, it'd be hilarious.
Yep, no more things need to be stuck in there. Just Eddie Pepitone at a grocery store.
Eddie Pepitone owns a car dealership. Eddie Pepitone deals with his neighbors. Anything he did would be great. I mention it all the time.
He's just shouting at the customers how fresh the tomatoes are.
Yes.
Just talk shit about all the things they check out with.
Actually, that's a funny idea for Eddie for a show. Every week, it's Eddie at a different job.
That is a good idea. You could probably get that on like True TV or something.
Yeah, like different. It's like different. Every week it's just Eddie. Whatever job he had, how he would deal with every. You know, with whatever.
It's like Dirty Jobs. Dirty Jobs only
doing them.
Yeah,
he, like complains
like
about them.
I would like to envision it as that old show, The Surreal Life, with like Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie, where they're doing things that are completely out of their wheelhouse.
Well, I didn't picture it a reality. I pictured it more like it's still not real.
You still wanted a single camera.
Yeah, it's not a real show like where he's really dealing with people. It's
so he's a character, and at the end of every show, he gets fired, and then the start of next show, he gets another job. There you go.
I think we just workshopped an Emmy Award winning show for next season.
I think you're right. Now, is that mine or yours?
It's obviously yours. You put your name on it, it's going
to
sell.
No, we work together. Don't give it to him.
No.
If we could get just a piece of it, you know.
This is our foot in the door, Travis.
Producing credit is all I need.
Craft services. You guys can do craft services.
All right. So I was thinking about the other day, well, just a couple of days ago. It's nice to talk to a funny guy, you know, who at an early age wanted to be a funny guy and make that a career, right? I was just thinking about the days of the prank phone call being over and how that's a real bummer, because I feel like that is a really early gateway into some sort of comedy, even though it's kind of a, you know, basic comedy.
I think prank phone call still exists. You just can't record it and play it anymore.
Well, you can't. Can you make a prank phone call, though, with caller ID and cell phones?
You could star. You could, but you're right. The bulk of prank phone calls is over because the number shows up. But there's still people with landlines, I guess. And you could hide your number and call people, I guess. But the best prank phone calls were, I don't think anyone ever did it as good as the Jerky Boys. They just had it down pat.
Is that when the prank phone call probably jumped? No, they had Crank Yankers for that, and they were kind of decent, but.
Yeah, no, there have been prank phone calls for forever.
I just remember some of my earliest memories of laughing hysterically with my friends were hearing my stepfather tell me stories about how we used to prank phone call people. And, you know, he'd give me the setups, the Prince Albert and the can, the Oliver clothes off, those kind of things. And, it's, you know, immediately after they left the house then and left our buddy, me and my buddy, to our own desires, we would, you know, automatically jump on that push button corded phone and make those phone calls.
Oh, me and my brother, I don't know why we thought this was funny, but me and my brother found my dad's yearbook, so we decided to call, like, businesses that advertised in the back and see if they were interested. And some of them did, like, you know, years later, it was a clothing store that was open, a hardware store, and I forget what we said, but we would be like, say, do you remember Paul Gress? Well, he's our dad. I think I remember what we said, but I think as I'm an adult now and realize I'm embarrassed to say.
So you even referenced your father in these prank phone calls that you made to businesses, local businesses.
Oh yeah, well it was so many like townships away, like you know, like we lived in the suburbs of Valley Forge, and this was all like, you know, in the and who knows, like we were young kids, I would imagine. Well, we didn't disguise that we were young kids. We tried to work that into it. Like, we said something like, he doesn't feed us or something.
We could really use a hot bath.
Keep in mind, we were very young. I mean, I could have been maybe 30. So, you know, I didn't know any about this. I'm kidding, obviously, for your one dumb listener. 30? That's very mature.
I can't believe you were still making those phone calls, Todd.
Yeah.
I've become kind of a regular listener of your podcast. I listen to it at work. I enjoy it a lot. And you guys introduced me to the Garth Brooks Facebook video, and I've been holding off talking about it because I knew that we were planning on having you on. I loved the Garth Brooks Facebook video so much. And
well, you know, go ahead.
Well, you were very passionate about it, and so I thought that you'd be a good person to have this discussion with.
It's amazing. It's almost like where I feel sad. Like, is he that delusional? Well, because it's not just it's almost sad.
But what I was thinking was, you don't really think about it, but Garth Brooks has sold more albums than Elvis. He sold 135 million albums. And that has to like hit you in the head and make you think, oh my God, everyone who encounters me knows who I am, and I've affected so many lives. And you have to
I gotta tell you, you're saying sort of what Tom said, and I disagree. And by the way, things don't have to be world hunger to debate them, so there certainly isn't. But I love debating this, because you're saying what Tom said, and I don't buy it. I'll tell you why. There's some other person as big as him in the area, like we talked about on the show. If somebody, you know, the Beatles, Paul McCartney, you could say, you know, or is big enough where we can throw it in there. You know, we're not comparing it. And who is not out of touch with coming off on a, if disingenuous was on a scale from 1 to 100, 1, you're a little disingenuous, 2, 100, it's 100% disingenuous. It's like, so if the truth was, yeah, you know what, you're right, you can't be that big and be in touch a little bit with reality, or what comes off phony, or what comes off, then I would say, okay, but it's not that. I wish it was that, but I'd love to know, like,
do you remember when he put on the wig and the little soul patch and was Chris Gaines?
Yeah, and he wanted to, he was disillusioned there for a while, but he thought that he was going to get away with coming out as a rock star called Chris Gaines, and nobody was going to know that it was Garth Brooks. Like, the record company wasn't going to immediately say, hey, Chris Gaines is Garth Brooks, buy this record. You know, I mean, he thought...
In defense of him, believe it or not, I can't believe I'm going to do it. This is pretty sad anyway. I think, and maybe I'm wrong, so you tell me. I'll tell you what I think. Didn't he really think, no, okay, they're going to know it's Garth Brooks, but they will accept him as this new character or this new person?
Well, there's no way he thought. I think he did. I think the way that they were trying to roll it out, or he was trying to roll it out, and, you know, the record company obviously disagreed, was that he was going to put out this anonymous CD and maybe this is where his ego comes into play, that he was going to be able to make a rock and roll song as a completely different person, and that he's so musically talented that no matter what he put out, it was going to become a superstar hit. Now, his follow-up to that was that he was going to make a movie as Chris Gaines, and that, I believe the story was, that's where he was going to reveal that Chris Gaines was Garth Brooks all along, if I remember the story correctly.
I'm going to say something kind of controversial here. The Chris Gaines album, not that bad.
It's not bad. It's not terrible.
It's a decent listen.
It's a product of its time. It belonged in the 90s where it stays.
But
I got to go. Is that when he did that? When did he do that?
I want to say it was probably 99.
Yeah, it's probably around then, yeah.
Hey, let me tell you something. Maybe I'm kidding a little, but not really. Maybe I'm not kidding at all. The state of mind that he's in now to make that video, if I had kids and they were like, you know, 5 and 6, and he was like, happened to be like a cousin of mine, and he was going to watch them for the week while I went out of town, I wouldn't let him. There's a delusion there. Delusion does not make you safe to be the guardian of a young child. And I just... Well, maybe he doesn't. He's that delusional. And by the way, sometimes I think, one night we were sitting around about a month ago talking about this, and I said, maybe I got a little out of hand. You know, not out of hand, but like exaggerated, and you're doing the show. So I rewatched it, thinking I'd go, oh, it's not that bad. And then I rewatched it, and I was like, no, it's that bad. It's that bad.
No,
and by the way, if some of your listeners, obviously they heard it already, because you rolled it in,
right,
and they don't think it's that bad, then I worry about them.
Well, I agree that it's bad, but I look at it like, I mean, like, you're a recognizable guy. I'm sure that you get recognized by people out there, and people come up to you and talk to you, right?
Yeah, but not anywhere near like
no,
that,
not like Garth Brooks, of course. But I mean, like, when somebody comes up to you and talks to you, do you kind of like think in your head, you know, oh, this guy knows my act. This guy knows, you know, that I'm a comedian. Do you kind of like feel like you kind of have to be on a little bit?
No. I mean, you know, look, there's different levels. I always go out of my way to say this out of respect to someone that's like, you know, someone that can't walk through the airport, I get it. That's a different thing, and they can't talk to everybody. But I always think, you know, and you know, we don't have to name people. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. When you're like, you walk, and you're like, wow, like you, Alec Baldwin or somebody, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Somebody like that or whoever. I don't deal with it like that. That's a different thing. But for when people come up and talk to me, some days I can talk a little longer, but I just take every situation differently. If I'm sitting at the airport and I'm bored out of my mind, and somebody, you know, in a very quick period proves they're enjoyable to talk to, sometimes I'll talk to people for 30 seconds. Sometimes I'll talk to people for 10 minutes. So it's just like, take every situation, but some people are enjoyable to talk to. You're enjoying the conversation. So.
But how does it feel, Todd, though? I mean, you're one among them, obviously, the people that I feel very familiar with. Like, if I ran into you, you know, obviously you have no idea who I am, but I feel like I have a strong connection to you. I listen to your podcast. I watch your stand-up. I read your book. I know a lot about you, as if we were friends for, you know, 5+ years. Like, how awkward is that when somebody comes up to you and, you know, talks to you like you're a friend and you have no clue who that person is? I mean, that's got to, I don't know, does that put pressure on you?
Well, like, again, it's not like I deal with it at that other level, but at the level I deal with it can also work to your advantage, too. So, at least, hey, look, this I'm very opinionated, but what I'm saying now is just for me. It's not for everybody else. Some people, some other person's a little shy or off stage, and it's not that they're jerks at all. They're just really shy, or maybe they're to themselves, and each person has to do what they want. But, like, you know, I like it sometimes because it helps you meet people. Like, if you're at a bar and you're in the mood to hang out and people just saw your show, you're like instantly best friends. So sometimes it works to your advantage to have them feel like they know you. And it's fun to make new friends sometimes, you know. I have friends, like, you know, when I go to like Minneapolis or something like that, there's like a guy and his girlfriend that came up to me after the show. And you know what? They really respect the boundaries of our friendship. Sometimes once a year they'll give me a call, how you doing? Sometimes we'll just see each other. We're like best friends when I'm in Minneapolis, and we'll go out. Almost every night that I'm there, they'll come to the show, we'll hang out afterwards, and I enjoy that friendship. If they were coming to L.A., yeah, I might see them, I might not, but I enjoy it. I you know, it can work good, and if somebody ever oversteps the boundaries of, you know, you just deal with that individual person, but overwhelmingly, people are great. You know, the other thing is, and maybe I am going to compliment myself here for a second.
Please do.
But when you don't... I always say this expression. I have most of my life, I'm insecure. If I have a moment of confidence, I don't think that makes me a bad person. But over the years, whenever there were guys, like, whether they're podcast guys or radio guys or stand-up guys, and what I like to call dumb acts, where they draw that audience that agrees with them, and that audience that agrees with them, it's not a compassionate audience because they're not compassionate, and they're not. So, you know, most people that I would think would like my comedy were kind and decent and loving, and I don't know how, because I feel I am, and I feel I try to defend the people in my act that need defending. Like I said, I don't want to be a comedian that is bullying the people that need a hug.
Sure.
You know, you should. I don't give a fuck about offending people. I just want, like I've said a million times, I want to hope that I offend the right people, not the people that are already getting picked on, and then I go on top of it. So I would like to believe that because of my act, or what I say when I'm on podcasts, that the people that come up to me are sweet and kind. And so, you know, they're not, that's why I say maybe because of what I do, overwhelmingly, 99% of the time people are awesome. And once in a blue moon, you get someone and you just deal with them.
So you just try to project that personality that you want to attract, essentially.
Right. Because I know a lot of radio guys, they don't even know, like, when they don't even know they're saying this, but, like, not all radio guys. Some radio guys, they don't say this at all. But over the years, even the last 20, you'll hear someone go, oh, we did a live remote. Our audience is so, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with what you do.
Well, that makes complete sense because I know the people that I gravitate towards, you know, if I listen to a podcast or a show and I'm completely against what they do, I don't continue to listen and then seek out their show so I can tell them how horrible of a person they are. I always do stick with the ones, I guess, that I associate my personality with more. So I guess that can make complete sense.
Yeah, so it doesn't mean, like, you know, if I had a sitcom that was on NBC, and that would be a different type, like I keep saying, because, you know, then you have, with the amount of people that might come up to me and what I do, I feel for now, I reap the benefits of it a lot. If you're at a restaurant or somebody maybe recognizes you or something, and then they're a little kinder to you. So it's got its pluses too. I don't want to look like, you know, I'm being so modest. The truth is I walked around the mall 7 hours today to one person recognize me. So I'm usually like, I'm like, I'm not leaving till someone recognizes me.
And as soon as they did, you were out.
Then I acted like, all right, I don't have all day.
You wear a t-shirt with, like, your album cover on it.
carrying a copy of your book.
Yes, a copy of my book wearing the same exact clothes that I'm wearing on the book.
So this week on the show, on the Todd Glass show on the Nerdist Network, right? That's Eddie Pepitone is on. Did you go and listen to a mariachi band and talk to Eddie Pepitone like right after I talked to you last night?
Wait a second. Why would you ask? Oh, because of the tweet?
That's on your Facebook, on the show's Facebook page. There's pictures of the mariachi band. And
let me tell you something. That I've done that at my house where I hired a mariachi band and then you tell them when you're there, like you on the phone, you're very specific. You go, when you have the outfit on and the hat and the jacket, you three are ready, instrument in hand, text me. And then I'll give you the lead. And you have all your friends hanging out in the house, and all of a sudden I'll just say something like, I wish we had a mariachi band. And then they shoot in and people freak out because all of a sudden it is such a large presence when a guitar, two trumpets come in the room, they're singing. It's like, what the fuck just happened? But I've never had it done to me. So on the podcast last night, or Tuesday night, Steve Fine Arts, and then Jake on the show planned it. Out of nowhere, a mariachi band just comes into the studio, and I was like, are you kidding me? It was overwhelming. It was like my face was going to explode from joy. I was already having fun. We were, smoking a little bit. And then these three guys come in. And then there's also like a 9-year-old kid singing too. And it was it was beautiful. It was, the kid was adorable. They were great. It was overwhelming.
How do you even go about hiring a mariachi band? Like, are they in the Yellow Pages?
You know what? They probably are, but these days just, Google it and they're just these guys either play at what they did for us, or I'm sure they play at restaurants, and they're available for all types of
like mariachi bands
situations.
Like on Yelp.
Could you imagine do that with like a mariachi band would be great. Could you imagine doing it with like a polka band, like an 8-piece polka band where they all come out with tubas and trumpets and everything?
I did that once with an accordion, and there was, I think, a trumpet, accordion, a guitar, and they did polka music, and they just came in, and it was the same thing. It's like it just comes from out of nowhere. You can probably get anybody to show up at your house. And you know what I wanted to do, which I thought would be really funny, was I have this running joke at my house. Like, I'm having a party. I don't know why. I always do it. It's like 1 in the morning, and I'll go, ah, shit. I turn to everybody, and I go, ah, shit. My parents are here, or home. My parents are home. Like, I live with my parents. I go, oh, shit, everybody, my parents are home. My parents are home. Shit. And Rory Scovel said I should do this, and I'm going to do it. And you could do this in a heartbeat. Get two actors. There's actors that would hire, like 70-year-old actors, a woman and a man. And then when you say that, they come in the house, like, with luggage. Like, Todd, we left you here. And they yell at me. They're like, "What is wrong with you?"
We said
Todd?
No parties.
This place is filthy.
We said no parties, and they go in the room, and my mom shuts the door, and she's mad. Now look at your mother; she's all upset. And like I said, my friends, if that ever happened, because they know I say that all the time, but they would not expect that I hired two actors to come in and play my parents. You know, it'd be funnier if I had my parents be like 40 years old.
I was gonna
like,
say you should make them younger, and they're like your adoptive parents.
Yeah. Shit, my parents are here. They're like 32. I'm like, God, they seem younger than you. That's a little weird.
You were adopted by people when... No, that doesn't work.
No,
I guess that could happen.
It's still fun.
Well,
so listen to the Todd Glass show on the Nerdist Network, and you'll hear a mariachi surprise this coming week.
Yeah, I guess we just ruined the surprise.
Just text. Probably will be like 10 minutes late. So, guys, I can give you a little bit more. I mean, I'm just sitting on my sofa here. It's up to you.
Okay, then I have one last question, Todd Glass. One final. This is a biggie. When Jesus Christ comes down from heaven, do you think that he will offer you a fist bump or a snarky, I'll call you later, and then disappear with a different posse?
Well, if there is a Jesus that's going to come down, I would say a fist bump. I think I've been pretty good while I was here.
You seem like a good. Seem like you're trying to spread joy with mariachi bands and parents coming home. I like it.
I'm trying.
Good egg, I'm that trying. Todd Glass.
I still steal hotel towels, but other than that, I'm pretty good.
I think they expect you to.
They build that into the budget.
Well, that's what I said. I wish they would do at Whole Foods. Just weigh us when we come in and weigh us when we leave and let us eat what we want.
You know, you can steal the towels from the pool. That's what I always learn.
They're always so small, though. They're like half the size of an actual hotel towel.
Yeah. Thank you. You can't steal the pool towels, right? They're not good. You got to get like a good, you know, a good hotel towel. Like, you know, you can't steal it from, you know, shitty towels. You got to get like the Four Season towels.
The embroidered towels.
You probably spend a lot of time in hotels. Do you always steal the towels?
I do. No, I actually really don't anymore, but I used to all the time. But I love hotels. I love the, I think it's a sense of calm to me. I mean, my house is very, very organized, but there's something about being in, like, especially the higher up hotel, there's just a sense of order to the room, even a little more. And, like, I don't want to say clean because I'm very clean in my house, but like you're at the Ritz-Carlton. It's just something about those rooms, and everything is perfect, and everything has its place, and every corner is painted, and the molding is high gloss, and everything. And I feel very calm in a hotel. Like when I wake up, I feel very organized and very centered. And I really try to get my house to be more like a hotel. I'm always simplifying my house and trying to. When I come home from a nice hotel on the road, I'm always constantly trying to, like, because not a lot, not too busy, not a lot of chaos, just, like, clean, not a lot going on. And so I spend a lot of time in hotels, but I very much enjoy it.
You know, in your house, do you have a bunch of, like, really unoffensive, generic pictures of sailboats?
I did. I have... You know what's so funny is that I used to take pictures of pictures when I was in a city because I wanted to show my friends where I was at, but, you know, and they never knew. They never knew. Like, I would take a picture. There was never a reflection. I never got caught. Now, everyone was like, wow, no one ever said anything. Until I think I sent the person I was in a relationship with a picture, not realizing it was black and white of the university on campus. And... he goes, you took a picture of the picture. I go, how did you know? He goes, it's black and white, moron.
That's an Instagram filter.
I want to, you know what? It was like 7-8 years ago, so there weren't as many techniques on the phone like that when you would be able to. So I like just go, oh, you got me. How many of the others? How many of the others were like that? I go, pretty much all. Why would it have to be a fist pump? What, a handshake?
I don't know. You could be a high five if you want.
I feel that's kind of informal for, you know, the son of God.
Yeah, but do you think he's really going to expunge a lot of, you know, formal? I think it's going to be more formal.
What's he going to do? Get cooties? Jesus.
No, he's going to come by. He's going to fist bump you. He's going to be like, hey, you're all right. And he's going to move on to the next. He's got a lot of people to get to. You know, he doesn't have time.
You guys really don't believe this, do you?
No.
No, of course not.
No, that's good. Hey, you know what, kids? I always say younger people get smarter and smarter, even though older people don't want to believe that. But we were talking about this yesterday. It's just factually true. You can argue that this group of younger people might not be right. Yeah, it's still up for debate. But you can't argue that in the 50s and the 60s, whatever the masses of brilliant young people were fighting for, they always end up being right. Always. Every time. Whatever they're fighting for, they end up being right. So if you just want to put some statistics together of the past, they're right now. Their kids are right, whatever they're thinking. And the younger generation has come along, the traditional sense of religion and God, they believe in it less and less and less. So if you want to use that, they're probably right about this too, you know? Obviously not talking about being spiritual and all that. Who would deny that?
Sure.
You know, to go inward and pray that you're going to be more patient with people. That, of course, no one... define that, but traditional, all that stuff and the gates and the thing.
I hesitate to denounce all of it just because, like, I feel like, you know, what if it is true? But I don't believe it. But,
you know, I thought about that. I have an answer for that. If it is true, and there is a God and there's the gates, I really did think about this. I'm not 100% positive.
Right.
But, you know, we put people, you know, if somebody murdered someone in your family, you hope that the jury understands it's reasonable doubt. That's why they put the word reasonable in there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's always doubt. Yeah, yeah. That word reasonable is in there for a reason, because then no one will go to jail. Because I don't think everyone's always like a half a percent, maybe, you know. But, in a lot of situations. So I think the thing is that there is the traditional sense of gates and this place where we go. Reasonably, no, I'm pretty sure there isn't. But I did think, what if I'm wrong? And I thought, this I'm positive about. I'm not positive that there isn't all that stuff, but I'm 100% positive there is a God, and he's the God we all claim he is, open-minded, brilliant, decent, kind, loving. I picture this. And there's the gates. Everything they see, you know, even the gates, some people say are figurative, some people think they really exist. And then I picture God's there, and I didn't believe he existed, and I picture for some reason a couple, a husband and a wife, go, hey, God, he didn't believe in you. He didn't believe in you. Don't let him in. He didn't believe in you. And he turns to them. He's even a little annoyed. He goes, excuse me, please don't, like, make me out to be a moron. He did good things that I believed in. I don't really care that he didn't do it in the name of me.
Right.
Get away.
He didn't need the scary repercussions to just live a moral, decent life.
And if some people did, and that's what gave them morals, that's fine. I'm not defying that.
Right.
But I really do. I picture this God going, no. I don't care. What am I going to do? Hey, this guy was kind. Picture the monster that they're explaining. This guy was kind. He was loving. He was decent. What type of God goes, but he didn't do it for me. I don't want to hang out with him. No, if God's everything they said, they're like, I don't care if he didn't believe in me. He still did everything I believe in. Come on in. I want to hang with you. That I'm positive about. And if I'm wrong about that, if he is a God that would go, you did everything I believe in. You tried to be decent like me, kind, loving, and caring, and nurturing. But you didn't do it in the name of me. I don't want to fucking be with that guy.
Right. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy. So if he is there and he's everything and is brilliant and decent, as kind and loving as everybody says he is, and that could happen, I still think I'll be okay. So I think I have it all covered up. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Comedian Todd Glass is on the phone with us. He has a new book out. All right, guys.
Todd, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for doing this.
Todd Glass Situation, available in paperback now, I believe.
Yes, and could you do me a favor? I want you to edit out the part when we talked about God. Also edit out the part about the fist bump.
Can we take
away the part about when I talked about my significant other? Also take away the part when we talked about everything else is fine.
Yeah, let's get rid of the Garth Brooks thing so you can do a follow-up.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You can do a follow-up on your show then, too.
Yes, thank you. But you can leave in the part where we talked about playing phone tag in the beginning.
Perfect.
And the book title, Snafu. Yeah, we'll leave that.
Take that out, too. Take that out.
Yeah, we can't talk about the publisher, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to make fun of him. So I hope you got enough there.
I hope everybody enjoyed our 1.5-minute interview with Todd
Glass.
We
said hi and thank you.
All right, guys. Well, good talking to you, and have a nice day.
Thanks, Todd.
Go fuck yourself. Thanks a lot.